for toilet paper? What is weight? Okay. Hey, it's 22 seconds after the hour of noon in this, the month of July, the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio, this, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. It is 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like, if you'd like to interact with us in an electronic fashion. It is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. We also have myriad web pages with which you may engage with the radio program. rickemerson.com. We got like 50 MySpace pages. Basically, the best way to go to rickemerson.com, which is sort of the clearinghouse. And all down the left side, there's links that go to Sarah's page, Tim's page, Aaron's page, Clyde's page. And then all down the right side is nothing but MySpace stuff. And by the way, I want to note that I now know the pain of... You know that thing when you ask somebody to be... When you ask somebody to be your MySpace friend, and then you're just sitting there just waiting. Just waiting. And it's a reflection upon you and all that you stand for, your value and worth as a human being. And then hours go by, and you find yourself saying irrationally, what could they be doing? What could they be weighing? I'm right here. Maybe not. Sarah's rolling her eyes to indicate that this never happens to her.
That's why I never ask anyone to be my friend. I'm afraid of the rejection.
Maybe Sarah Dillon just gets accepted right away. Maybe
no,
you're on.
No, I just never.
Have you ever asked anybody?
No.
I did it for the first time this weekend.
No, I totally have a fear of rejection. I'm not going to do it.
Have you seen that T-shirt? That's friend request denied. Chris, mailman Chris wore that to a listener party night. I did for the first time. This is not a guarantee, but I'll talk about it here in a minute. No, for the very first time this weekend, yesterday morning, I asked someone to be a MySpace friend, and it's still just sitting there. And I'm checking it every 5 minutes.
Who did you ask?
I'll tell you here in a minute.
Okay. That is the definition of a guarantee.
The answer's not all that impressive. The answer's going to be anticlimactic. But I asked yesterday morning, and coming this morning, well, surely 24 hours will have been enough. And it's just sitting there. And so now I feel bad for all the people that, because I only do it like once a week. Like, once a week, I'll go through and all the friend requests. I mean, not that I'm, like, the most popular guy on earth, but, they kind of pile up, and I'll go through.
I think you're one of them.
Well, I'm no Dane Cook. You see that Dane Cook thing? That crap where he's got, like, a million friends? Screw that guy. We'll talk about that, too. Talk about Dane Cook and MySpace coming up later on. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Coming up today, Snuff Watch, a just-added Clown Watch. Lisa Goddard reporting live from Jerusalem. Also, well, we were supposed to have Gary Baumgarten. What is it with the people with CNN, man? They're flaking like a bad case of dandruff. I don't have any voice left. I can't speak.
Yelling at some hot dog eating festival.
He's busy yelling at... He lost his voice yelling at Lark and Beazle. So Gary Baumgarten apparently will not be joining us today. But they're trying to find... Is it they're getting somebody from TV? From the CNN TV side?
They didn't guarantee they're getting us somebody, but they're looking.
They're going to look around.
The woman sounded not interested in talking to me.
Portland?
Yeah.
Fine. All right. Well, we specifically requested Anderson Cooper. That may or may not happen.
May not.
Anderson Cooper to talk about... Talk about what kind of eyeshadow goes with your socks. So that's coming. Snuff Watch, yeah, Lisa Goddard, Clown Watch, Clyde Lewis, News of Ground Zero coming up later this hour. We have to review. We didn't get to this last week. Hey, I'm not doing that thing. Scotty, we will not take caller five. We need to figure out a name for whatever this task is, because we're clearly going to make this an ongoing thing. So we need to figure. We're going to take caller number five now for somebody who will track the things that I tease, and then at the end of the program, rejoin us to say to tell us what I have gotten to and what I have not. Because we've learned that that job has to be outsourced. We have to find some third party to come on and verify what I've accomplished during the program, what I failed to accomplish. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We'll take caller number five right now. And here's a couple things. A, you got to be able to listen to the bulk of the program. You got to be able to listen to more or less the entire show. It can't be like where you listen to the first 10 minutes and then the last 10 minutes, and then you try to figure out what I talked about and what I did not. So if you are able to listen to the entire program today, we'll take caller number five at 503-733-2970. 970. 503-733-2970. And we will have that person track which items I get to today and which items I do not. And just for taking part in that, you want a pair of tickets to the International Fight League competition on September 9th, 2006, which features Matt Lindland. So that's coming up. And speaking of that, we'll talk more about that. More about that later on as well. So, what was my point? I don't know. I had nothing. Blah, 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 and so forth, and whatnot. And we're attempting to get somebody from CNN later on as well. I had something else. What the hell was it? Well, there you go. That's it. We may or may not have a storm watch today. It is Monday, and so we're operating under the assumption that we have storm on Mondays, but we're not entirely clear about that. So we'll get to that later on as well, if we are in fact in contact with storm, etc., etc., so on and so forth. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How are you?
Doing well. I have a car.
That's why you're doing well. You've got that smile on your face that indicates I am now newly automotive.
It's enormous.
Would you like to tell us what kind of car you're driving?
I'm driving a Ford Taurus.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's like early 90s.
Is it what year Ford Taurus is it?
Like 93 or 94.
And what color?
White.
Yeah. Which Tim says implies that it used to be a rental car.
In many cases.
Now, how do you know that?
If you go to LAX or any major airport, every rental car you get, it's always
white. Is that so they can tell if you've damaged it?
More than likely.
Is that what it is? Because, man, that's the thing. Having a white car, I don't know anybody that would go. I don't know why you would buy a car that's white. Because it's just every nick, every dent, every scrape, everything that gets done to a man, it just shows up like you wouldn't even believe. But it beats not having a car at all. There is no worse feeling than just not having a car. You know, it is like when you lose your keys or when you turn the keys and the engine is. Doesn't start, you got nothing. It's just the worst, most emasculating feeling on earth. So, anyway, did you drive today?
I did, well, because I have to do this thing after the show.
You don't have to explain it to us. You've been without a car for like a month. I understand that when you get a car back, you just drive in. That's what you do. That's the way it works.
It's very exciting.
All right.
And I've got a parking spot, like, right out front.
Well, you got to go feed the meter, don't you?
Yeah, at 1:30.
You would like Tim. Are you going to remember where you parked at least?
Yeah, I got a really good spot.
Fantastic. Is it huge?
Actually, that's what happened to me the last time I drove, so hopefully my car is still in one piece.
Is it a four-door?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, it's huge. I had to parallel park, and I was so afraid I was going to hit somebody.
This is part of a divorce settlement.
Really? No, there is
and
no
I
more
kept the
suburban.
House and the house.
There is no more suburban vehicle than a Ford Taurus. A Ford Taurus. I don't know if it's still the same way now, but all through like the late 80s and throughout the 90s, the Ford Taurus was the station wagon of the 90s. If you wanted to signify that you were living in some kind of a Brady house, that's exactly what it was. That or in rare cases. A Tempo, like
Tempo is if you couldn't afford the Taurus.
That's exactly what it is. It's like my parents had
a
Tempo.
It's a poor man's Taurus.
That's exactly what it was. The Tempo was the stepping stone between like a Pinto and a Taurus. There was the Tempo.
Before that was the Escort.
Yes, I had an Escort.
Which mine was turned into accordion after I hit something on Hawthorne. See, I hit somebody on Hawthorne so they had hit me.
No, every radio guy I've ever known has driven an Escort because you could buy them. There was a point, I don't think you can do it now, but there was a time when you could drive an Escort for like $500 mm-hmm. or buy one. They were everywhere.
And they last forever as long as you don't hit something.
like you're not plowing into something like
that. A 1966 Buick.
Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
A plane crashes in this reporter's usually spotless neighborhood.
Oh, damn. We didn't even talk about that. So
oh, we're going to get to
there
that.
There was at the Oregon International Air Show this weekend, which went badly.
Did he die?
The pilot
there was some death.
The underground
yes, there was. There was loss of life.
Well, the thing was, most of the people in the neighborhood were more than likely at the air show, so the houses were all empty, except for mine, where we were. Working on a different project.
We'll end the suspense and tell you Tim Riley's house was not hit by the plane,
no, it was
by
not.
The way. So there you go.
Meanwhile, the president tells Vladimir Putin, Russia needs to become more of a democracy like Iraq. No thanks, says Putin. YouTube hits 100 million downloads.
Fantastic.
And a Home Depot installer is electrocuted installing a washer and dryer.
Well, there you go. All right. It's 503-733-2970. So the whole MySpace story is this. So I'm like you. I got like this is what I did this weekend. The totality of what I did was sitting around updating my MySpace page and responding to, because I'm not trying to complain about it, but with the advent of MySpace, especially if I mean, if you're on the radio, if you're the band or something, there's this whole article in the front of USA Today's Purple section today about comedians and how comedians are now using MySpace like Dane Cook. Dane Cook was the first guy to really use that. There's this famous story that he sold out two shows at Madison Square Garden. I don't even know this is true. But the story is that he sold out two performances in a row with Madison Square Garden with no external publicity at all. No TV ads, no radio ads, no billboards, no banners, no flyers. It was solely with MySpace advertising. And so Dane Cook is sort of the poster child for that. But the death of MySpace or the jumping of the shark is at hand. You can totally tell because they're doing what marketers call line extension. Because I think it's either today or it's later this week that they are launching MySpace Comedy. And it's going to be like this whole separate version of MySpace just for comedians. And that's when things start to go bad, when they start to extend the brand. The key is to do one thing, do it well, don't extend, don't start slapping your name on everything else.
How about MySpace Lite?
That's what's going to happen. There's going to be MySpace Comedy, MySpace Rock, MySpace, for old people, MySpace for people with webbed feet. That's how everything begins to peak and then taper off. So you write it down. You heard it here first. The creation of MySpace Comedy. That is going to be the moment that people point to when everything started to fizzle for those guys. It's going to be like that Friendster thing where you were able to see who was looking at your profile. It's going to be like, that will be the, all of these things, all of these moments, those will be the Kerry Russell haircutting moments of the internet. But so I'm like you, where I got, I don't know, what, 600, 700 friends, something like that. But I have never asked a single person. I'm of the let them come to me school of thought. I'll just... Rick Emerson doesn't ask people to be friends. Rick Emerson lets people ask him.
Good for you.
That's how Rick Emerson does it.
Because I'm accepting no more applications for friends this year.
Yes, right.
Please check back next year.
Yes, I'm sorry. We have no available positions. We will keep your resume on file for 30 days. No, I don't ever ask anybody because, again, it is like if they say no, then you have to go kill yourself. So I did it for the first time this weekend, and it wasn't even a person. It was a group. It was the... It was a group, the West Memphis 3, the Free to West Memphis 3 group. Because I'm a big supporter of those guys. So I forget even how I went there. It's like I was at Storm's page and she linked to some, and you know how it is. It's like one page links to another, and pretty soon you're 50 degrees away from where you started and you have no idea where it all began. But I somehow ended up on the page for the Free to West Memphis 3, which is for these three kids in Arkansas that are on death row, unfairly, many people believe. Anyway, so I was going to add them. So I'm like, please add me as friend. Click. And what do? I just sit there and wait. As though the West Memphis 3 webmaster is just sitting there waiting for Rick Emerson to request to be a friend. And I wait for several awkward long minutes, hitting the refresh button constantly. And here's the thing, because I've never asked anybody to be my friend on MySpace, I don't even know what happens. I don't know what I'm waiting for. Like, do I get like a little, like do fireworks go off or something? Or do I get like an email or just... There's some helpful little flash animation appear on my screen saying, congratulations, you are now the friend of... I don't even know what to wait for because I've never done it. And so then I go... Then I start checking in every hour. Then I'm checking in every few minutes. Last night I'm checking before I go to bed. Have you ever done this? Have you ever gotten up, from your couch to go to the kitchen? Or, like, from the kitchen to go to the bathroom? Or, like, from the bedroom to go to the couch? And on the way, you walk by the computer room and you're like... Well, I'll just check in. I'll just see if anybody's added me to their friends list right now. And of course, here we are now. It's like 36 hours later, and I still haven't been added. So now I'm starting to take it personally. I'm not going to dwell on it.
You should check if they logged on.
I can do that, can't I?
Uh-huh.
Well, presume. But see, then if they have and they still haven't added me, then it's like I almost... Then that's the worst. That's insult to injury.
Rick, I really don't think that they're purposely not adding you.
I know, but now my whole identity is tied to it. Well, all right. We got to talk about this refrigerator thing, too. All right, it's 503-73, since apparently they're taking away the refrigerator at CBS Radio. So now we don't have paper towels. We don't have forks. They've taken away the coffee creamer. They're threatening... These aren't things, by the way, that have just run out. I think these are things that have actively been taken away from us. We had to have a listener, Tim, this listener's name, and God bless him. We had to have a listener bring Sarah metal forks. Because there is no more cutlery. There are no more eating utensils with which she can consume food. So we had to have a guy drop off forks. I'm going to have to go start buying our own creamer. There are no paper towels. There are no napkins of any kind in the kitchen at CBS Radio. They have threatened to get rid of the coffee. And now I have here, this is an internal memo from CBS. threatening to get rid of, I swear to God, threatening to get rid of the refrigerator in the kitchen.
And give it to Katie Couric. It'll be your own private refrigerator.
It's not even a small fridge. This isn't even like the little dorm fridge. This is, you know, it's a refrigerator. It's a big-ass refrigerator in the kitchen. I'll read you the memo here in a minute. Let's go to your personal savior, Tim Riley. He's at the city desk.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the city desk, Tim Riley.
From Hyatt House, the bottom of the coin, tower of downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the City Desk News Beat. Tim Riley reporting. Hundreds of Oregon Air Show fans watched in horror as a fighter jet plane wobbled over some trees next to the airport, then plunged into a fashionable neighborhood. One home was obliterated as the British-made jet fighter exploded in flames. Three other homes caught fire. The air show canceled as fire and rescue crews rushed to the scene. The pilot was dead. The wailing of sirens pierced the afternoon. A plume of thick black smoke blanketed the northerly blue skies. White picket fences were scorched by the flames. The laughter of children temporarily hushed. Luckily, nobody on the ground was injured.
Now, you were there, weren't you? Or you were right nearby.
Right. I live there.
And so, well, not in the house that it was
not
hit.
Not in the house that was
should
hit.
Should note that.
Yeah.
Because
just a couple blocks from where it was.
And wow. Is it because you and Joni DeRoshi and Patrick, the camera, you guys were, this is a secret project that
we're
cannot elaborate
on. We're filming a secret television show that we can't divulge
it. We cannot in any time reveal any information about this.
So and we were filming there because it is a nice neighborhood. At least it was.
So you thought.
At least it began that way.
Where there's no violence and where you were not likely to be killed by anything. And so Joni was describing to me.
428 was the time.
Do you feel like the guy who saw the Hindenburg? Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you had to point to the sky and shout about the humanity?
Well, we didn't know at that time.
Well, this is how Joni, tell me if this is right. Joni described it to me last I was talking to her. She said that you guys were filming, not outdoors, though.
We were filming in my living room.
Filming in the living room, but you guys had to be very conscious of the planes flying overhead because they would show up on the film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you didn't want to have to edit out. Like, I think at Lord of the Rings, they had that problem where, like, that thing when they're going through the dead marshes, and that was right near an airport, and they had to go in post-production to get the airplane sound. So she said that you guys were having to be really conscious of the planes because you didn't want to show up on the tape. And so she said that you're there, you're filming, you hear all the planes flying, and as she described it, you're hearing a plane, and then nothing, long silence.
Sirens.
Then sirens.
All at once.
And then
we go out to the balcony.
That's some like Chuck Yeager stuff right there mm-hmm. where you know that's bad. And then you go to the balcony.
It's Hiroshima.
It's just a huge plume of smoke. So.
You can see the grass from your balcony?
You can see the smoke.
Wow.
Yeah. I have tall trees that separate my house from the Max tracks. So you couldn't see it directly, but had the trees not been there all the way, you could have seen it in that neighborhood. Yeah.
And so you were there. You were witness to history.
Yes, I am.
All right.
But anyway, Steve Calloway of the air show expresses his sympathy to those affected.
We have a 19-year record of safety. We are a safe air show, and so we are obviously very, very concerned with what's happened, and our thoughts and prayers at this point are with all of those who have been impacted.
Now, does anybody know, I mean, why this happened? Because it was, the guy who was flying like 78?
Yeah, he was an older man. An attorney for some airline.
All right.
But that's what we know. Steve Calloway says the Hawker Hunter was not flying on the show, but was on display. Apparently, it fell out of the sky while on display.
He was a part of the static display with the warbirds, which are former military planes.
This is a
and so he was departing at the end and was headed back to Southern California.
Uh-huh.
It was on display, and it just fell from the sky to a house.
Static display typically means not flying. But
Carl Rove type spin.
Yeah, all right.
Do this.
This reminds me, has anybody ever seen a plane crash or anything like that? Have you ever witnessed anything like that?
Mm-hmm. I don't think I have, no.
This happens about once. Didn't this happen here a while back with a news copter? Not here at CBS, but was it K2 that happened to?
Oh, didn't they have two copters? I believe they did.
Yes, I believe they did.
And one they didn't mention after a while.
Yes. Is there an open channel or something? Do you hear a lot of hiss? I hear, it sounds like there's an open channel on the board somewhere.
Hmm.
There we go. What was that?
Oh, that's always up. It's Lycus's feed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I was just hearing a lot. I thought maybe it was going deaf or something.
the plane was owned by 73-year-old Los Angeles aviation lawyer Robert Guilford. It was on the ground during the show, they claim.
Oh, I see. But okay, so they weren't going to... So was the last day of the show yesterday?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it was on display. Well, I guess that makes sense. If it's a plane, I guess you fly it there and you fly, I guess you don't truck it.
Right.
I guess there's no point in that. So he was full. They were flying it back to wherever, back to California?
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. No, this happens about every 6 years somewhere because I think there was a K2 helicopter that hit something, crashed it, or hit a house or something like that, went down in some. When I was in Spokane, there was a, and it's always news copters for some reason. I don't know what that's all about. There was some news copter in Spokane a decade ago, where it was filming something over like a residential neighborhood, and something went wrong, and it was at the rear rotor, started screwing up or whatever. Anyway, so the pilot lost control of the plane, lost control of the helicopter. He's trying to get control of the helicopter back. It starts wobbling in the air and hits some power lines, and then the power line sends it into a tailspin, and it takes out like three houses.
Mm-hmm.
Because it hit one, it was like skipping a stone. It went in at an angle, hit the first house, hit the second house, and then, like, landed in literally inside the third house. Just crashed into it.
So. Well, if you remember back in the old days of the Cold War, for instance, Gary Powers, the guy that crashed his spy plane.
Oh, yeah, the guy that crashed the U-2.
Well, anyway, he became a traffic reporter for KNBC in Los Angeles, and he crashed his helicopter doing traffic.
I think at some point they learned to put him behind a desk somewhere. All right.
So that's that.
Well, there you go. So there's the...
I think that's the last air show, to be honest with you.
The air show. Well, here's
what the problem is.
I'm not trying to make light. I'm just saying we gave tickets to it all week. So if you were out there and witnessed this, I'm not trying to be morbid.
No.
But if you witnessed this, or if you were there, if you saw it or whatever, I mean, we'd like to hear from you because I don't think everybody's very unclear. I mean, I know that it seems. On the one hand, flying planes, they always tell you statistically, how many times you get tired of, well, you know, statistically speaking, it's safer than driving a car.
Superman said that.
Which is it? Because I guess they it's supposed to make you feel better, but it doesn't make you feel any better because flying is still freaking weird. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't have a fear of flying as such. It's not like I'm phobic about it or whatever. But it is one of those things you can't let yourself think about too much. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those.
Well, read SkyMall.
I knew a guy, and this guy I knew years ago, and his whole thing was, and I don't understand how he could do this, because he was afraid of flying. And now Sarah just gets she rides the X train. She just gets on the Xanax, right? That's your thing before you fly?
Yeah, it didn't really, this last time it was. I usually just get on the vodka.
Oh, that wasn't Xanax, it was Ativan that you took, right?
Yeah, it was...
With vodka.
Excuse me, like, yeah, some prescription.
Oh, it's fantastic. Oh, did you use all of those, by the way?
No, I still have all of them. I don't like them.
How many do you have?
Weird.
Really?
I have like 30.
We'll talk later.
You'll never be a rock star.
No. I was going to say. Yeah. Yeah, your street cred has gone out the window. You came back and you have 30 Ativan left. But I have a friend of mine. His whole thing was just to get baked out of his mind, just to smoke a whole bunch of pot. And I can't imagine how you could be high. I think if I was high and trying to fly in an airplane, you would just sit there and you would just ponder I'm in a huge piece of metal that's floating in the air. It doesn't make any sense. It really does freak you out if you stop to think about it. That, I mean, literally you are defying the laws of gravity. I mean, it's a huge 30-ton piece of metal that's just floating in the air, held up by a jet stream that you can't even see. Just, I mean, the whole thing is just bizarre. So, yeah, I can't even think about that. Oh, I'm sorry. Scotty, you know, I don't have my, the call screener up here. Hold on, let me, do I just click on this?
Yes.
All right, thank you. I can't, can you read this? Scotty came in and brought me handwritten.
Sammy Kershaw, Election Day, October 28th, 1997.
No, the part that Scotty wrote.
John Line 1. Jane, the doormaker. Remember her?
John, hello.
Hey, I did mean to be morbid about this, but did you...
Has already sailed.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Are you old enough to remember Jane Doorknocker?
I don't know.
From San Francisco who died?
No.
Doing traffic helicopter in Boston, I believe it was?
No.
They heard her last... maybe 2 minutes of broadcast as the helicopter is going down.
No.
Oh, that was fun.
Fun?
I'm imagining it wasn't fun.
Oh, not for her, but it was sure as hell fun for the people who were listening, and particularly when they replayed it endlessly,
Lord.
Like they are doing this.
I think we should turn
this into Tradio or something. A little more upbeat.
There you go. That's the end of that call. Thank you. All right.
Break.
503. Oh, Kristen, by the way, Kristen claims... She said, this is Chris from County. She says, no, our helicopter, this is K2, our helicopter never crashed. It was one of the other stations.
Oh, right. By the way, the space shuttle did not crash. That's why you haven't heard anything about it. It did land safely.
Todd the Corpse wants to know, so Tim and Joni could hear planes flying around and sirens afterward, but they didn't hear any sort of explosion. That seems odd. Wouldn't you hear the impact?
You think you would, wouldn't you? No, it was apparently the eyewitnesses said it was just silent, and then it just plunged down, and there was a crash, and there was smoke after that.
Well, the planes, I mean, again, I'm not trying
to be... They don't go like in a war movie, like, oh, woo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be morbid about the whole thing, but I mean, it's a huge engine. It's a huge piece of machinery filled with fuel.
You would think
that it would be some sort of explosion.
It was cruising fairly low and just plunged into this house.
Hmm. All right. Well, maybe the house...
But it did make like a whistling sound, if that's...
Okay. We should break down.
Yeah.
It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up, we have Lisa Goddard, live from Jerusalem, talking about the various unpleasantness that's going on over there. Later on, Clyde Lewis news at Ground Zero. We've got... What the hell else do we have today? Oh, we have someone in the stead of Gary Baumgarten coming up later on. Talk about the World Series of Pop Culture and Snuffwatch. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Moment of my life. It's like, what are you gonna do? Yeah, look at this. Look at my shoes. No, I don't look like a prude.
You don't want to be insulting.
I don't want to stare, though. Yeah. I want to be complimentary. All right. Hey, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Oh, thank you for coming along.
This is why we don't have a refrigerator.
Katie Couric. We got to pay to... Getting paid to get those teeth capped for the 80th time.
Job.
Yeah, did you see the thing about how CBS is going to start advertising on a side of eggs?
It's part of a new fall promo. But somebody asked me yesterday, what do eggs have to do with fall?
No. We'll talk more about it. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up, we'll talk to some random person from CNN in the stead of Gary Baumgarten. Whoever they are, they will not be Gary Baumgarten, though. So
Larry
they are.
King.
No, it's we'd settle. We would deign to talk to Larry King. I would settle for Larry King, I suppose. Also, Stormwatch, Clownwatch, Snuffwatch, all coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, live from Jerusalem, let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, CNN radio correspondent, Lisa Goddard. Lisa, how are you?
I am very good. I'm really happy that you kept the West Wing music going.
Oh, no. Now more than ever.
Now more than ever. Aaron Sorkin.
No, it's...
A constant reference. Yes, it works.
That's what I'm saying. Well, no, these are the times when this dramatic music really plays well.
It's true.
Well, I don't even know. I mean, I know that it's almost pointless to even in like 90 seconds, 2 minutes, have you explain everything that's going on. But I mean, it is, not to make light of it, but it is an escalated version of the same old thing. I mean, Israel and Hezbollah have never really been what you call a close companions. But Israel has really, really, unless I'm wrong about this, they've really stepped up. I mean, in the past, Israel has sort of tried to attack or strike against Hezbollah to try to contain them and get them to lay off. But it seems now that they're just going to try to obliterate them, and they're just going for the jugular. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think you are right about that. I think if Israel could, they would like to use this conflict to destroy Hezbollah. It's not clear that they'll be able to do that, but they say that just in the past 6 days of bombing, they've brought down Hezbollah's capability by 30%. You know, it's nightfall here, it's pitch dark, and this is the time that Israel usually starts bombing around Beirut. So we're expecting to hear about a possible blast tonight, but already they've destroyed bridges, roads, ports. The airport around Beirut is closed because of Israel airstrikes. Israel clearly trying to isolate Hezbollah. Lebanon caught somewhat in the middle, but Israel is also saying, Lebanon, you are not innocent. We believe you have been helping Hezbollah, or at least you've been letting them attack us for years.
And whenever something like this happens, there's all of this. It's sort of like the North Korean situation, a little bit, in that the international community, led by the United States, they talk to Israel and they say, look, what can we do to get you to sort of back down, or to scale things down, or to maybe just take a breath and let us find some peaceful resolution? But it seems to me that, I mean, I hate to be like this is sort of fortune cookie wisdom, but I mean, it seems like Israel's going to do what Israel's going to do. And there really is no swaying them on things like this. They've sort of got their own position and they're sticking to it. It doesn't really seem like there's a whole lot that any external force is going to be able to do about that.
Well, it seems in the last few hours, you know, we heard Prime Minister Ehud Olmert speaking to the Knesset, the parliament here, and it seems like he is perhaps toning down his demands on Hezbollah. He still has some very severe demands, or at least very strong demands. He originally was saying Hezbollah must be disarmed according to the UN resolution that requires that. Now he's saying that Hezbollah must push back far away from the border, and they must release their prisoners the two Israeli soldiers that they captured. That's a little bit toning down for Israel, and it may indicate that the UN pressure is working, or it may indicate that Israel feels like it's starting to gain the upper hand, and it has that ability.
Did you see this quote? It was Newt Gingrich who said this yesterday, I believe. This quote from Newt Gingrich that we need to recognize that we are now in World War III. I've got the, do we have the actual
number
sound,
four.
Tim?
Number
is this
four.
Cut number four? Mm-hmm. This is actually Newt Gingrich yesterday speaking about this.
We're in the early stages of what I would describe as the Third World War, and frankly, our bureaucracies aren't responding fast enough. We don't have the right attitude about this.
And I know Lieberman has said something to the same effect. So, I mean, is there that sense there, too, that this is the initial or stages of something that is simply going to escalate again and again and again and again?
There's a sense here that this is how major wars start, but it's not clear that this will be that. I think there is still hope that there will be some kind of containment, that even as these two sides keep slugging at each other, maybe these aren't going to be death blows. Maybe this is going to be releasing, I hate to put it this way, but releasing this militant tension that has been building up for years. I think people are hoping this is not going to be that kind of world war, but they realize that the possibility is there. The one good thing is that Syria and Iran are indicating that they want to stay out of this. As much as they publicly denounce Israel and publicly say they would like Israel blown off the face of the earth, in this conflict, Iran and Syria are not stepping up, and instead they're trying to work for a ceasefire. At least that's what they say publicly. The hope is that that's true. If they get involved, then there is very serious danger for a major world conflict.
See, if I was really worthy of the Sorkin music right now, I'd do some tearful speech in Latin or something. And then there would be, like, swelling patriotic music behind me. So, but there's...
Come on.
I really just don't... I don't have the linguistic skills at my disposal. So instead, I will just say, be safe. We will talk to you soon as things kind of either unfold or unravel over there.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard in Jerusalem. All right. 503-733-2970. How great is that?
You had a sound bite to go along with it. You sound like you were really up on this.
Like a real radio station there for a moment. Maybe they'll put us on the side of an egg. Oh, if you don't know what we should tell you what we're talking. If you don't know what we're talking about, do we have some sort of a sounder for what's happening at CBS?
I don't believe so.
We need to get one. We'll try to get one tonight, maybe. You know, either like the old CBS News sounder.
I'll find
or like the, like the movie. I used to have the ABC Movie of the Week theme music, which is really recognizable. But it was like some sort of a CBS Movie of the Week thing. We've got these guys in the audience that have taken it upon themselves to start creating their own production elements. Have I played you this one? Wait, this just came in. This is from, is it Jim? John? Some guy, designated himself as the official armchair production department of the Rick Emerson Show. Wait, here we go.
It's not at noon, it's not an hour long, and there's 30% less news. It's the new news hour. And now, here's Tim Riley.
See, isn't that fantastic?
So if we had,
I love that music.
What is the music there?
That's the old ABC owned and actually it's still used in Los Angeles. It's been used since the 60s. That's ABC owned and operated television stations news music.
Fantastic.
Eyewitness news in most markets.
See, there you go. So we had something like that, and then we could do a what's happening at CBS this week, and we could tell you about how we're apparently being denied coffee creamer and napkins because we've got to pay Katie Couric's inflated salary so she can save the company, a company which is now, I swear to God, advertising its shows on the side of eggs.
Yep.
So we'll get to that. Let's see. What am I? Oh, is this?
I just sent you a bunch of CBS Thunders.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Is this Clyde? Okay, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, ladies and gentlemen, from ClydeLewis.com, news at Ground Zero, the all-around hairy, scary guy, Clyde Lewis. How are you, sir?
Actually, you're paying for them to laser into eggshells the CBS emblem.
Right, but isn't that the, yeah, that's what I mean. They're advertising, and there's a whole lot of bad puns like crack a case with CSI.
Leave the yolks to us. That's really great creative programming.
Justin,
well, maybe we can get part-time jobs in this egg assembly line.
And you know, somewhere like Dick Orkin was paid like $9 million or something to come up with that.
Oh, that's what we're going to do in the space when they remove the refrigerator.
Yeah,
they're
going to see. There's a Clio award and then somebody's future for that. Yeah. What's up anyway, in the world of Clyde Lewis?
Well, last week I wanted to tell you, and I didn't get a chance to tell you, that Aaron and I had put together a bit about last year called Doomsday and Other Happy Moments. And what it was is it was a piece that we put together. We actually created the beginnings of World War III. And one of the things that we did was we talked about North Korea basically setting off missiles and Japan and being frightened and Taiwan basically being attacked. And it's a very interesting piece. They still have it on my website. If you go to ClydeLewis.com, you can listen to the MP3. We've already had about, get a load of this, 30,000 downloads of this thing, and people are, and the military is very interested in where we came up with our idea. And what we did is we came up with the idea with a guy by the name of Juan Cole, who is a Michigan professor, and we basically took his ideas and we expanded upon it. And we actually said, in fact, I said at Ground Zero Lounge last week as I was up on stage, I said, I think that we're now starting and we're now in the middle of beginning World War III. And my audience kind of thought I was nuts, but now when we hear Gingrich saying it, I think that maybe it's time to admit that this is World War III.
You know, here's the thing about World War III. I think about this a lot, actually. The thing about the phrase World War III.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching, like all men, the History Channel last week, because that's what guys do. It's like our default setting. Mm-hmm. And so I was watching the History Channel, and it was one of those great shows that's narrated by Rory Gilmore's grandfather.
Right.
There was a whole lot of, the push, you know, into Poland began in earnest in 1944 with Hitler's troops advancing, you know, what is
the lights went out in Europe.
Exactly. It's one of those shows where it's just, you know, and it's just like endless shots of that swastika being blown up or whatever, you know, the Allies blowing it up. But I think about the phrases World War I and World War II, and my question is, maybe Tim, maybe you know this, is that when... What's happening in the background there?
That's Rhonda.
Little slap and tickle going on?
Yeah, a little bit.
Is it Rhonda? Rhonda Shelby? So when did World War II, that conflict, become referred to as World War II?
With the invasion of Poland.
After Japan bombed Pearl Harbor.
No. Tim says it's what?
After the invasion of Poland.
But I mean,
after D-Day?
No, Poland.
Both?
1939, September 1st.
Really?
Oh, okay. I thought it was after. Because I remember we didn't want to go into Europe.
Right.
Until after Japan.
Because my thing is, like, you wonder if there's some sort of committee that gets together. Like, we now officially christen this, like I swing a bottle of champagne. It is now World War II. Bam.
Well, there has to be a number of nations, I think something like 13 or 14 nations that have to be in that position
So I wonder about the World War III, because World War III, that phrase, has been used as sort of, I don't know, that phrase gets used so often, and it's usually, the phrase World War III is always used to refer to nuclear war, like through the 80s, Reagan constantly said that.
Yes.
Yeah, and so I always wonder if there will ever be a war, even if it deserves the phrase World War III, if they would ever use it, or if that phrase is so inextricably tied to all of these weird images that the Cold War put into us that we'll just be afraid to ever use it.
Some people are even saying the World War III was the Cold War, but I think that's kind of hedging your bet.
That's a cop-out, no.
Yeah, it's not at all.
No, if nothing's bombed, it's not a real war.
Speaking of World Wars and World War II, you were talking about World War II a little bit.
Yes.
Tonight at Ground Zero Lounge, it's going to be a really amazing show. And if you ever want to come and see a show where Ground Zero is going to be at its best, it's going to be tonight, because we're going to invite Matt Haley,
Who's the Superman artist.
Well, yeah. Yes, he's the Superman artist. He did Superman Returns and also a comic book that he does called G.I. Spy, which is a comic book that's near and dear to my heart because what it is it talks about something that I had written about a while ago about the possibility that the Nazis are responsible for flying saucer technology. And so what happens is that he's got this character, kind of like a James Bond type character, and Albert Einstein is his Q, and they're basically going out and they're talking about things that happened in World War II with perhaps the Nazis having mechanical
robots. That's where the phrase Foo Fighters came from, right?
Exactly. The Foo Fighters were actually UFOs. They were big flying saucers or little balls of light that would follow planes. So between the flying saucers, and he's got this one scene that I was reading about the other night where the main character is fighting this robot man. It's a robot Nazi armored soldier. It's just amazing some of these characters he's created. So we'll be able to take a look at that. I'll also have, hopefully, I'm digging out of my archives, actual photographs of Nazi flying saucers that were taken and were released after the war, and they're amazing to look at because that was technology that was just beyond our comprehension, which eventually evolved into the rocketry was brought over after the war. So it's some interesting stuff. We'll have some historical background, also some questions about Matt Haley and Superman. I don't know if...
No, Matt's a cool guy. People should definitely go just to check him out. Yeah,
he's amazing. And if you want information on that, you can go to the Geek in the City website, because Aaron has posted, of course, Geeks United to come out tonight to see the show and to participate in this. And also, if you want to hear the presentation that Aaron and I put together about World War III, you can go to my website at ClydeLewis.com. The MP3 is down at the bottom of the page. You can click on it and listen to it. It's a very scary show. And a matter of fact, like I said, the military is interested in what we've done with this show because of what we've patterned out and what we think would happen.
And
the scenario is pretty believable.
What time is the Dante's thing happen tonight?
Dante's is happening tonight at 8 o'clock. And, of course, get there early because lately your listeners and several other people have been coming in droves to see the shows, and I'm very excited about that. And we've been filling the place up, so get in early and get your seat ready, and also bring your comics, bring things to sign. I'm sure he'll sign a few things for you. And also he's involved with this new show with Stan Lee called Who Wants to Be a Superhero.
I saw him. He sent me an email about that.
Excellent. Yeah, he wants to even come on your show and talk about it a little bit.
Cool.
He's really excited.
So. Ground Zero Lounge tonight, Dante's 8 o'clock, and the website is ClydeLewis.com. All right, go take care of the giggling girl in the background.
I will.
All right, thank you, man. There you go. There's Clyde
Bye-bye.
Lewis, ladies and gentlemen. Actual photos of UFOs. Anywho, it's 503-733-2970. Let's see here. Troy, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up? Okay, and thank you.
Willamette Valley.
Hello, what?
Oh, my name is Chase Black.
Yeah?
From the Willamette Valley, and I listen to your guys' show while I'm in farm equipment.
Okay, thank you.
And I just wanted to say, I really agree with what that guy just said, but... You guys, or he just said, and you said, you got some really good ideas. I'm going to check out that website. Kind of the same thing going on with World War II. It started, with the assassination of Franz Ferdinand, and started with other countries, and then we jump in.
Yeah, you're thinking of something else. Okay, yes. No, that's absolutely true, sir.
I bet he has his own UFO picture.
Great. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. I have no idea what that was about.
Oh, you're so mean.
I'm not mean. I came in. Did you hear? I picked up the phone. He was already talking.
I know.
I think
it's like that guy who called after the show that one day and you couldn't get off for a half an hour.
Oh, yeah. Boy, that was the worst thing ever. Let me just tell you this. I walk through the lobby sometimes. And Carol, who works at the front, see, normally when you have a... What do you say these days? Is it a receptionist? It's not secretary. Is it receptionist?
Gal Friday.
Yes. My girl will take care of you. I'd like to actually have that. I'd like to have some sort of female, some female employee that was like contractually bound to be referred to as my girl. Just like William Paley. My girl will validate your parking up front. But Carol at the front of reception, normally a receptionist is there to sort of screen out the riffraff and to, maybe help you out with things, help you take care of stuff, sort of like Scotty in a way. Receptionists frequently, historically have done that. But Carol, I'm not going to say that Carol just doesn't do any of that. Like, Carol's response to everything, do it yourself. Like, it's kind of great in a sort of off-putting kind of way.
Get me tickets to the best show in town.
Yeah, seriously. Carol, can you help me with this phone call? No. Okay.
She's one of the hippest ladies I've ever met, though.
She is. I mean, she's, you know, an older woman. I don't know what age she is.
She's like mid-50s.
It'd be wrong for me to guess. But yeah, she's grown children. But she wears these huge Sarah Dillon rhinestone-studded sunglasses and drives like a red convertible.
And, yeah, convertible, like long red nails.
Totally. But it's like, but you know, typically, especially, you know, me, where I am theoretically in some sort of quasi-management position, where you get people calling you a lot, and they always, you know, most of the calls are fine, but every so often you just get some crazy person that calls you, you just get some freakish nitwit that wants to pick, I have a great idea for a radio show. It's a radio show all about trees. And we would talk about various kinds of trees in the Northwest and tree culture. And we would have people call up with their experiences having to do with trees. And, you know, Northwest is full of trees, and I feel this radio program has potential to garner a way. And no one who calls up on the phone pitching a weekend show to you ever has a good show. They're all terrible. They're all awful.
I once had a successful infomercial Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock on the old KOTK.
I don't know who you're talking about. Anyway, but typically when somebody like that calls up, you know, she'll say, Rick, crazy person pitching a horrible weekend show on line two, and I'll say, yeah, can you just put that through to voicemail? I don't want to talk to them. And like a normal receptionist would say, like, okay, bam, call goes to voicemail, zing, I delete it, never hear it. Carol doesn't do that, though. I'm walking through the lobby, and there's that guest phone in the lobby, like a white courtesy phone for when people are waiting for a meeting and they need to make outgoing calls.
Pick up the white crazy phone.
That's exactly what it is. I'll be walking through the lobby, and invariably, without fail, I'm walking through the lobby, and Carol will say, hey, Rick, a crazy person pitching a terrible weekend show that you will never, ever, ever want to put on line two. And I'll say, oh, can you just put that to voicemail? No, pick it up. And she'll immediately press the button, and the white courtesy phone starts ringing. And it's like I'm right there, and I have to answer it. And then I got roped into talking to some nutcase for half an hour. And crazy people are impossible to get off the phone to. I mean, I suppose, no, wherever you work, I'm sure it's the same where you work. In whatever field, there is some nutcase contingent that is sure that they have some product or service that you need. You know what I mean? Like if you work at like a dry cleaning place, I'm sure there's some guy out there who sells like a new and improved kind of coat hanger, and he is convinced that it's right for like easy speed dry cleaning or whatever. And he calls you 50 times a week about it. And you try to be polite, you try to be cool with a whole lot of, we are not currently adding any additional programming at this time. We will, however, be happy to put your air check on file for future openings.
I am a motivational speaker.
Oh. You're just motivating me to not answer the phone. That's what you're doing. Motivating people to change the station. Theoretically speaking. It's going straight to hell. I'm sorry. I seem to have gotten off track. Let's see. Grant, I love the show. Grant, comment on World War III. Hello, Grant.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi. Please, now to be commenting on World War III.
Well, the whole thing is, I mean, I know you guys don't typically focus too much on politics, but we shouldn't dignify the term World War III because that's really what the right-wing freaks want us to do. They think that if they get us all worked up into a lather over some type of impending doom
scenario. What does that mean? What is the lather that people, what is the lather made of? What kind of lather is it? I don't understand this lather that people are constantly getting worked up.
I think when we're dealing with the right-wing freaks, it's a fecal material that they
No. Yeah. That's unpleasant.
You know what I'm
saying. Why do you have to say that? Listen to this.
It's typical of them. That's what they do. And I know most of your listener constituents is mostly leftist people. And we shouldn't dignify the term World War III by letting them get everybody freaked out about it and think that we need to, you know, just stick with the status quo and keep the fools in power that we have right now. So
you're so bitter.
I am. You know, after so many years of having this administration do what it's done to us, you know, when I heard them use the term World War III on your show, I'm like, no, let's not dignify it like that.
But you know what?
And that's my rant for the day, Rick.
People aren't any smarter than they were in 2001.
No, it's true. People are dumb today. They're going to be dumb tomorrow, Grant.
They get dumber every year.
Amen. Totally true. But anyway, I'll let you guys get about your business. Thanks for putting me on.
Thank you, Grant.
Well, just accept it. Move on.
Most of your audience is leftist people. That's so great. That phrase, most of your audience is leftist people, is great because it's like that's the language used by someone who does not primarily speak English. That's a whole lot of most of your audience is Negro people, is it not? Just, it's like this overly formal language that means nothing.
How about a new leftist weekend show? And how about a woman doing it?
Okay, see, you've got some... Man, you got something. What is, you got a, what is that there for? You got a thing. You got something stuck in your craw, Tim Riley. You.
What is a craw?
I don't know. I don't know what a craw is. I don't know where the lather comes from. Rick.
Can we try to get to some news?
Russia. Sorry. Oh, like you're going to produce. That's right.
Tim's been sitting there with this bushwatch in his hands for like 20 minutes.
I keep forgetting that Scotty's not the producer.
Please pick up the white phone.
Rick, Russia does not refer to World War II as World War II. Russians call it the Great Patriotic War. You kind of freak me out with the stuff you know sometimes, by the way.
I watch the History Channel a lot if I'm not watching C-SPAN.
Did you watch Road Warrior on the History Channel this weekend?
I didn't. I was busy doing other things.
What is Road Warrior?
It's this awesome movie with Mel Gibson in it. Nate made me watch it, and it was actually...
Oh,
really
no,
good.
No, okay, I know, no, I know that Road Warrior.
Yeah, it was on the History Channel. How weird is that?
That's, yeah, in my head, like, when I thought maybe you meant it was a television series. Why would... The Road Warrior be on the History Channel.
Figured out. I don't know. They had all these fun facts about it, though. They play the movie and then a fun fact about
on the History Channel?
Sometimes they do Hollywood fact and fiction on historic things. So that probably is what that is about.
That's bizarre.
No, why not?
That movie was weird.
Oh, no. Are you kidding me? Yeah, that's a classic. No, it's genius. That's just bizarre that it would be on there, though.
Mm.
Yeah. I watched the best movie this weekend. You know what kind of television just goes down really easily? What kind of TV just goes down like a big dollop of sweet cream is docudramas, you know, like biographical films, you know what I mean? In manner of whatever, like sort of scripted movies about real people.
Biographies.
But yeah. I mean, but yeah, but not like A&E biography, but like, it's like a Cybill Shepherd as kind of.
Oh, like an E type of biography.
An E type of biography. Like a VH1 has a whole market in those now where they do those, you know, Daydream Believers, The Monkey Story, which is coming up this week, by the way. That's going to be taping. Or Battle to Hell, they did the Meatloaf docu movie. But I watched Living Proof, the Hank Williams Jr. story, starring. Who is the least likely guy, and by the way, this is from like 1983, so Sarah won't know the answer to this. Who is the least likely guy to play a rough-and-tumble outlaw country singer, Hank Williams Jr.?
Oh, I don't know.
Yes, it's what's his name, Richard Thomas? The guy who played John Boy Walton?
Oh, the guy with the big thing on his face?
I hate that guy with the big mole.
Yeah?
Listen to you both went to the mole.
He's so obnoxious.
Bunch of shallow people.
He was the star in the movie that I got cut out of called The Invaders for Fox.
Does he have a mole? I didn't notice it.
Are you kidding me? How can you not notice it?
I'm Buck Melanoma, Molly Russell's wart.
It's like as big as, what's that, Fred Savage's on Austin Powers. It's huge.
Yeah, that's what he's all about.
We're talking about... What are you about? I'm about moles. This week is off to a flying start. I mean, remember how we were going to be all serious this week and get stuff done?
I mean, his agent doesn't have to be asked for a headshot.
A mole shot.
Just name him and people automatically...
Oh, yeah, mole guy. Yeah, send them over. We're talking about Richard Thomas, John Boy Walton.
Yes, I can't believe he gets work. He's horribly unattractive.
People like the wart. Women love it.
It amazes me that you even know who he is.
I know who he is from It.
He was in It. See, I never saw It because I heard there was a stupid puppet spider at the end.
Yes.
And I was like, I don't. And I love
but
that.
The
book.
Rest of it's scary, like the scary clown coming out. Of the
well, that's Tim Curry, man. Yeah. I know. I loved the book. Have you read It? The book?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I read the book.
I loved the book so much that it's like same reason I never saw The Stand because that's his masterwork in many ways. And I'm like, I don't want to be screwing up the image of my head, so I chose not to see It. But John Boy Walton has. I never saw the wart. I didn't notice it. You know what it is? His acting was just that good.
No, they can't. They shoot him from a different angle.
They
get him from his good side.
Lucas came in and CGI'd the wart away. No, this is from 1983, him playing Hank Williams Jr. And he's like, I got to tell you, though, I bought it. I bought him as Hank Williams Jr. I bought him as Bo Cephas. I really did. I am an unashamed Hank Williams Jr. fan. And I know that that's not, that's, I know that many people laugh. Many people like to poke fun at Hank Williams Jr. They dislike him, and I'm unashamed about that. But Hank Williams Jr. is very renegade, you know, very edgy, kind of gruff outlaw persona. And it's like, here's John Boy Walton. But he sold it. He really did. Because the movie ends in 83, so it ended like before his huge, it ended before his huge peak in popularity. It ended right around the time that he put out like the Stone to the Jukebox, you know, like a couple years after that. So it didn't have any of the sort of like Monday Night Football, that whole era and whatever. But I don't even remember where I was going with this. Oh, but Scotty J is taking this opportunity to remind me, speaking of guys like that, we have David Cassidy coming on the show tomorrow. And I know that Sarah pointed out I always say this, but I really don't know what I'm going to say to David Cassidy.
There's the wart.
Huge. You can see it from there.
Is he smoking a cigarette?
Molly Russell's wart. Hold on. Let me look.
He's chewing on a piece of hay.
Oh.
Look at that thing.
All right, but I swear to God, I didn't notice it. I was watching it.
After like 8 seasons of The Waltons, you never noticed that wart.
No, maybe that's what it is. It's like living next to a waterfall. After a while, you don't even hear it. You know, it's like the ticking of an alarm clock. You've owned it for a few weeks, and you just don't even notice the ticking anymore. That's what the wart is. A wart is just like that. Hey, can we all agree that The Waltons has the saddest TV theme song of all time?
Well, it's one of the saddest TV shows ever.
Oh, man.
It's not uplifting. I mean, trees fall on people when they're getting ready for Christmas and things like
that. It's like Little House on the Prairie.
Mom drives out the top of the mountain on somebody's birthday.
Did you
cuts an arm off at the old sawmill. No, one had a happy ending.
It is a
mark. And if one of the kids were missing, they could write off, you know, 2 or 3 kids and nobody would miss it.
It is a mark of this show, by the way, that my response to Tim's phrase, someone getting an arm cut off at the old sawmill, just results in peals of laughter. Did you ever notice, it's like Little House on the Prairie is the same way. Did you ever notice how much bad crap happens to that family? Just every week, someone blinded, somebody else attacked by a wild boar. You know, smallpox sweeps through the entire town and kills half the people. There's a fire, you know, so.
And how could I, Godsey, keep a country store going with just that family patronizing it?
I don't know. I have nothing.
That's why I never took that show seriously.
Little House on the Prairie?
No, The Waltons.
Oh, no. I just like the sepia tone photographs at them at the beginning.
Oh, that is kind of nice.
All right. Little House on the Prairie, though, it's like, that's a chick show. So I only watched it a couple times when my sister would make me watch it. And it's like pretty soon you learn to identify it. Like as soon as you see
that. That show was depressing.
Oh, it's totally, that's what I'm saying. It's like totally, every week something terrible happened.
It's like Desperate Housewives on the Prairie.
desperate hillbillies. But as soon as you flip by and you see What's-Her-Face falling in the grass, it's like, that's my cue to, you know, falling in the clover, it's like my cue to change the channel.
With the blind girl?
Yeah, and it's like, but it had Nellie Olson, who was kind of hot, because you knew that she was dirty. Dirty. So dirty. And it had, didn't that show have Matthew Labrador? What's that guy's name? Matthew Labrador with an X? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He had a French name, and it ended with an X.
Mm-hmm.
Labrador.
These are long-forgotten people in television.
But then he was on that. But then Matthew from Little House on the Prairie grew up to be on Whiz Kids, which was the television knockoff of War Games.
Don't remember.
I swear to God, people are calling about this. look at this. Nellie is old and 50-ish, but still looks good, says Scotty J.
Can we break?
You're doing a little pig nose thing. All right, Sarah's pushing up the end of her nose in manner of a pig or similar. What are we doing here? Are we breaking? Okay, here's the thing. We come back, Troy's going to talk about a helicopter that crashed on his farm. Dave, his mother-in-law, was on Little House on the Prairie. Okay. Oh, and CBS is taking away our refrigerator. Because we're all 5. All right. Perhaps a storm watch. We're unclear about that. Oh, and CNN has no one. Whole goddamn news organization. They can't find anybody to come on and talk about the... Can't find anybody to come on and talk about North Korea. Apparently, they stopped gathering news at CNN. The second N now stands for, like, nothing. All right, back after this. This is Rick Emerson, Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere.